ambassador to hear the chief of Columbia's Continental Staff, William L. Shirer. We take you now to Berlin.
Hello, America. Hello, CBS. This is Berlin. The sands are running fast.
And hello. This is America, where the sands are also running fast. Let's check in at the front lines of the fight to save democracy.
And how can we make sure that all the statements that you said were correct, so we can trust what you say?
Well, first of all, some of the things that I say will be incorrect and should be corrected. So nobody's going to bat 1,000.
That was America's other president, Elon Musk. And this is America. I'm your host, Rachel Bitticoffer.
And I'm Aaron Murphy. And yes, of course, we're going to take a closer look at the weirdest news conference ever to take place in the Oval Office.
Greetings from the bunker, folks. Listen, right out of the gate, I got something important to tell y'all. He who saves his country does not violate any law.
Right. And when Donald Trump pins a tweet, and yes, that's what he actually posted on social media over the weekend, you know he means it.
And the framers of our Constitution are doing somersaults in their graves. Aaron, catch us up on the week.
Well, Rachel, let's go straight to that news conference with Elon Musk in his dark MAGA hat. He tried to defend destroying the federal government by pretending he and his so-called Department of Government Efficiency are auditing for waste, fraud, and abuse. And as weird as it was to see a president literally taking a back seat to the world's richest man standing behind the Resolute desk, it had nothing on the show from Elon Musk's kid. The boy's actual name is, and forgive me here, X-A-E-A-X-I-I. Anyway, little Nas Picker X stole the show first with some boogers, but then by telling Donald Trump to...
All the same?
Yep, you heard it right. Shut your mouth.
That's rough. Man, not only is this kid stuck with the name X, but now he's going to spend his whole life getting shit about picking his nose on national TV. Aaron, did you hear the juicy tabloid news from the weekend?
I can't say I did. I was too busy watching Trump's taxpayer-funded limousine save American taxpayers' money by taking a lap around the Indy 500 track.
That was two laps, actually. Well, on Friday, MAGA influencer Ashley St. Clair announced that she had a now five-month-old baby with Elon Musk, making this kid number 13 from five different women. That's family values right there, dude. St. Clair says she wants to, quote, allow our child to grow in a normal and safe environment. Good luck with that, girl. You know I'm sensitive to the kids, but did you know what his other kids are named? I mean, little X has it pretty good, actually. Here are the other names. Exa Dark Sidere. I'm assuming that might be a girl, you know?
Dark Sidere. Okay.
All right. This is my favorite one, dude. Techno Mechanicus. That's a name, but he named his children. Okay, so apparently, along with, you know, his seed, he gets naming rights and comes up with these terrible names he's saddling with these poor children. It's child abuse.
Oh, boy. Okay, back to the news. Vice President J.D. Vance shocked the entire world in a speech at the Munich Security Conference on Friday when he seemed to suggest the biggest threat facing the West is small L liberalism.
The threat that I worry the most about vis-a-vis Europe is not Russia, it's not China, it's not any other external actor. And what I worry about is the threat from within, the retreat of Europe from some of its most fundamental values, values shared with the United States of America.
Let's just cut to the chase. He was basically saying Europe needs to resist globalization and global immigration, and he said it in the guise of protecting the, quote, free speech that allows political leaders to foment anger, fear, and resistance. The BBC characterized Vance's speech as an attack on Washington's allies and called it, quote, a very weird 20 minutes, one met largely with silence from delegates.
And trust me, I say this with all humor. If American democracy can survive 10 years of Greta Thunberg scolding, you guys can survive a few months of Elon Musk.
Since no one in Europe laughed at that joke aside from his two aides, let's try it again, Debbie Downer style.
If American democracy can survive 10 years of Greta Thunberg scolding, you guys can survive a few months of Elon Musk.
Oh, boy. On Face the Nation Sunday, host Margaret Brennan challenged not long for the job Secretary of State Marco Rubio on the terrible optics of having America's vice president appeal to far-right populism from Munich, Germany.
Well, he was standing in a country where free speech was weaponized to conduct a genocide. And he met with the head of a political party that has far-right views and some historic ties to extreme groups. The context of that was changing the tone of it. And you know that the censorship
I have to disagree with you. Free speech was not used to conduct a genocide. The genocide was conducted by an authoritarian Nazi regime that happened to also be genocidal because they hated Jews and they hated minorities and they hated those that they had a list of people they hated, but primarily the Jews. There was no free speech in Nazi Germany. There was none. There was also no opposition in Nazi Germany. They were a sole and only party that governed that country. So that's not an accurate reflection of history.
The Nazis' mass murders and the genocide of the Jews of Europe was 100% caused by free speech. What we're learning is that some common sense regulations about lying, unscrupulous people who turn the right of free speech into the right to lie you into radicalization has really harkened home how important that speech component is. It's the same with the Rwandan genocide, which I wrote about a few weeks ago on The Cycle. And it was also true with the Civil War. I learned that from Eric Larson's recent book, The Demon of Unrest, which you definitely should read if you haven't read, which it becomes clear to me like the secession movement from the States is a product of propaganda that was penetrating the South with really hyperbolic shit about Lincoln that wasn't true. Lincoln's position on the slavery situation was that it should not spread to the new states. He was very vocal about not touching current slavery in the South, and yet they painted him as the guy who's going to end slavery. And that prompted Southern legislatures to secede from the Union, which of course leads us to civil war. So it absolutely matters when people are given the right to lie, some of them will do it, and they will do it to the point where they cause violence.
In terms of the cabinet, Senate Republicans confirmed two of Donald Trump's most controversial cabinet picks, Tulsi Gabbard as Director of National Intelligence and RFK Jr. for Health Secretary. A Senate committee advanced another grotesquely unqualified nominee, Kash Patel, to lead the FBI. He is poised to be confirmed by the Senate sometime this week, and this means that only one of Trump's crazy nominees, Matt Gaetz, your favorite, Rachel, failed to become a cabinet member because he pulled his own name out of consideration.
MAGA is such a den of vipers and snakes. You have to wonder what Squirrelhead had in that file, in that report on him, because it must have been something supercalifragilistically expialidocious bad.
Well, that brings me to another blockbuster headline from this week, Rachel, and that was the plain sight quid pro quo deal that Trump's Department of Justice struck with corrupt New York City Mayor Eric Adams. Apparently, in exchange for Mayor Adams' assistance hunting down the illegals, Adams will have his entire federal case dismissed. And this, of course, is despite the fact that prosecutors were preparing to submit a superseding indictment charging Adams with even more crimes after he tried to destroy the evidence, allegedly.
Wait, destroying evidence? Obstruction of justice? Shit, no wonder Trump likes him.
Well, both Mayor Adams and Project 2025's chief architect and now Trump's border czar Tom Homan deny quid pro quo. But if that doesn't pass the smell test, you're not alone. Here's CNN's Dana Bash getting down to brass tacks with Tom Homan.
You met on Thursday with the New York mayor, and he announced then that he would give ICE agents access to the prison on Rikers Island. You called that a game changer. A few days before Adams made that announcement, the Justice Department instructed prosecutors to drop federal corruption charges against him. It sounds like the DOJ dropped the case against Adams, and in exchange, he let you into Rikers. Is that what happened?
No, I think that's ridiculous. Meaning Mayor Adams meant...
Tom Homan and Mayor Adams sat on a couch together for a very friendly Fox and Friends joint interview where they denied the allegations again. Listen carefully to this exchange when Homan reminds all of us exactly who's in charge in this strange new alliance between New York City's now exonerated Democratic mayor and government ICE agents.
People had me gone months ago, but you know what? I'm sitting on your couch talking to Fox and Friends.
You are sitting today talking about the new alliance between ICE and Adams. So thank you very much for coming.
Thank you. Alliance was never severed.
If he doesn't come true,
you're up early anyway.
If he doesn't come true, I'll be back in New York City,
right.
And we won't be sitting on the couch. I'll be in his office.
up his butt, saying, where the hell is the agreement we came to? So
After Trump's Justice Department ordered the corruption case against Mayor Adams to be dropped, the new U.S. attorney for Manhattan resigned. Trump appointed Danielle Sassoon to the post a couple weeks ago, and in her 8-page resignation letter to Attorney General Pam Bondi, Sassoon called the arrangement a quid pro quo and said it was inconsistent with her, quote, duty to prosecute federal crimes without fear or favor. 5 other federal prosecutors resigned as well. Rachel, it's a little glimmer of hope and integrity in an administration that doesn't have much of either.
I want to focus on something, guys. He who saves the country does not violate any law. I mean, Trump went full Napoleon Dynamite, didn't he? Look, I think that's what I want to focus on for a minute. This Munich stuff was so bad. And just prior to that, we had our alcoholic defense secretary completely undermine Ukraine's best bargaining chip.
But we must start by recognizing that returning to Ukraine's pre-2014 borders is an unrealistic objective. Chasing this illusionary goal will only prolong the war and cause more suffering. A durable peace for Ukraine must include robust security guarantees to ensure that the war will not begin again. This must not be Minsk 3.0. That said, the United States does not believe that NATO membership for Ukraine is a realistic outcome of a negotiated settlement.
Needless to say, as a debut in that job, it doesn't get any better than giving up the entire game to our biggest enemy in the world. And while Trump shuts Ukraine out of the so-called peace talks with Russia, European leaders are holding an emergency meeting of their own. Look, you should know something. Like, when we study World War II, and you're probably familiar with a term called appeasement, right? Well, what that appeasement meant was when Hitler started his land grabbing, first by annexing Austria and then spreading into, you know, Czechoslovakia and Poland. Like, the bargaining that Chamberlain was doing to avoid war was giving away the goose. And I mean, he had a meeting, a summit with Hitler to decide the fate of Czechoslovakia, and they didn't let the Czechoslovakians into the meeting. I mean, there's some gifts like that, right? Look, it's important for you guys to realize what's happening here in the U.S. is it's happening all over the world, okay? Over the weekend, I came across footage from New Zealand. New Zealand, okay? New Zealand is the country when they had a mass shooting at Christchurch. It banned assault weapons within like a month, okay? And what this video was essentially their version of the Proud Boys ranting about how they're going to crush out the left and take out all the gays.
Ugh. Well, a side note about the Proud Boys, Rachel, a historic black church in D.C. It's so old, by the way, that it held the funeral of Frederick Douglass. It was vandalized by the Proud Boys back during the BLM protests in Washington back in 2020. And now the church controls the Proud Boys' trademark. The ruling in D.C. Superior Court grants rights to the trademark of the group's name to the Metropolitan African Methodist Episcopal Church, and it prevents the Proud Boys members from selling any merchandise with its name or symbols without the church's consent.
Yeah, so small victories, dude. So as if having the VP empowering far-right populism at a security conference literally designed to fight far-right populism wasn't bad enough, I also came across this little ditty from MAGA hero, the Argentine PM, Javier Milei. I only wish y'all could see the crazy eyes that go along with this audio.
No se negocia con esa mierda, no se negocia porque te van a llevar puesto. Si tienen un golpeador que caga trompadas a la mujer.
Yeah, that was some Nazi shit right there. Yes, it ties into what we talked about last week with the purge at the Kennedy Center and Donald Trump's golden age of culture. That's what he calls it anyway. What it comes down to is that we have this subset of mostly men who never got to sit at the cool kids table back in high school. And now they've spent the last 40 years plotting their revenge.
Yeah, dude, it's definitely revenge of the nerds, right? I mean, like, okay, listen, I'm not going to pretend. Actually, I used to tell my students, look, I'm very cultured. I watch everything from The Deadliest Catch to So You Think You Can Dance. Okay, I know that's not real culture. The culture of the left is very hoity-toity. Like, if you're the kind of person that reads, you know, the New York Times best 5 fiction books, you're not really the typical American. I know, because I don't read those books, okay? You know, culturally, right? Like, there's always an advantage for, you know, culture on the left, because that's where all these, you know, the small L liberalism is playing out in the arts and music and books and TV, whatever it is, right? So, you know, this idea that if they can get control and set up this autocracy, that they're going to establish like a dominant culture is not something that people should be taking lightly. And it's something that the Nazis did. I mean, people always think about the Nazis, again, in terms of the last years of that regime, the World War II years, and then the years of the Holocaust and their greatest crime, which was against the Jews. But they also committed a lot of other crimes against a lot of other people. And out the gate, those people were political enemies, journalists, and artists of every type. And what they did is they set up, within that first few months, the Ministry of Propaganda and Enlightenment, which Joseph Goebbels ran, okay? And what started to happen very quickly was that you couldn't publish anything, a book, a movie, an ad, whatever it was, a newspaper article, unless the ministry approved it, right? And what they, by doing that, it allowed them to slice out like what they called degenerate culture. And for them, it was, you know, women who now had the right to vote. And then in Berlin, like obvious and blatant homosexuality, which keep in mind, guys, I mean, we're talking about 1920s, 1930s. So you couldn't be out of the closet gay here in the US until the mid-2000s. So, you know, really ahead in terms of culture, but they were able to seize on that fear, which is just what MAGA is doing now. Seizing on the fear of a culture that feels alien. And that's what trans stuff does. It feels alien to mainstream middle America, right? And then seizing on the angst that that provokes to say, listen, if freedom's going to be used in this way, then we should not have freedom. And that's essentially what MAGA has been kind of normalizing in terms of its own cult.
Well, and that makes a whole lot of sense why DEI is the first target for the Trump administration, beginning moments into the presidency.
It is. And, you know, something else about that DEI stuff, people need to understand, and you just find the media can't help but like carry weight for these guys, right? So like, what if you ask the Rita report, what's Elon doing? Well, he's auditing the government for waste, fraud, and abuse. No, he fucking isn't.
Yeah, yeah.
Like every time you write a headline that says that or alleges that, like that's not what is happening. He's auditing the government for shit that they find culturally offensive, mostly stuff about gay people and trans people, but also about gender and women and reproductive freedom and climate change, okay? Yeah. And they're purging it out of existence. In fact, Aaron, I don't know if you know this, but they took the T+ off of the Stonewall National Monument in New York.
Wow. Oh, God, that's crazy stuff. Rachel, I want to focus on another wild clip from this week's news, which kind of cements the big issue here. So MAGA's biggest stars have spent years convincing Fox News viewers and other consumers of that kind of media that government is the problem. So take a listen to how CNN's Dana Bash addressed this during an interview with newly minted Department of Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem.
Absolutely. I remember a time when Republicans were very careful about and worried about the government, particularly unelected people.
Oh, we can't trust the government anymore.
Having access to personal data.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
You are the government.
Yes, that's what I'm saying, is that the American people now are saying that we have had our personal information shared and out there in the public.
Elon Musk has access to it.
Yeah, but Elon Musk is part of the administration that is helping us identify where we can find.
All right, so did you catch that? You are the government. I'm not sure that inconvenient little fact will register in a mind as intellectually sharp as Kristi Noem's, but...
Yeah, hats off to Dana Bash, because if it was me, I'd have been like, bitch, you is the government! What the fuck are you talking about? You are the government now, right? So if the government sucks, Kristi, maybe I'd take it to the gravel pit and shoot it in the head. All right, we're going to pivot because I want to talk about Trump's tax plans and the GOP House tax bill that they've put out. Now, As you guys know, they're talking about $4 trillion in spending cuts, right? And I want to be very clear where those spending cuts are going to come from. Number one, they're planning on eviscerating what is known as Medicaid expansion. Medicaid expansion is a component part of Obamacare. And just to go in the Wayback Machine for a second, because I know many people are not me and they haven't been watching this closely for decades and able to kind of synthesize it all together. But let's go back to 2010. Now, why did we pass Obamacare? Because the health insurance system sucked. And it sucks now, but it sucked way fucking more back then. And it was, you know, the Republican plan was a market-based plan that they ran in Massachusetts under Mitt Romney, right? And the Democrats, in their classic fucking give away the barn before the horse bargaining strategy, came to the table, and instead of opening the bid and holding it at government-run public option, they went, you know, and opened the bid basically at Mitt Romney shit. So, you know, in other words, they designed a policy that was designed by the Republicans, and they did it so that people would accept it better than something, you know, radical like a government-run healthcare system. And, you know, long and short of it, okay, there's nobody in America that doesn't have better health insurance now than they had in 2009. I mean, pre-existing coverage stuff, the preventative wellness out, you know, no out-of-pocket on that shit, birth control free instead of having a copay. And of course, the lifetime caps for people, especially children with, you know, serious heart defects would cap out of insurance. That shit all got wiped away. And then, you know, to kind of compensate for failing to deal with the uninsured crisis, because that's really the other part of what we were dealing with in 2010 with Obamacare, Democrats created something called Medicaid expansion. And what that was designed to do, folks, was it was designed to allow the working poor, people who were poor still, right? You make $20,000 a year, dude, you're poor. I don't give a fuck where you're doing it. But those people couldn't qualify for Medicaid unless they were pregnant. As soon as you were pregnant, you could qualify because they earned too much money, right? And so the Democrats are like, look, let's expand Medicaid out to cover the working class with huge subsidies for the insurance premium, okay? And they're buying into the state Medicaid program. And that way, people who can't afford insurance get insurance. And it worked fucking wonders, except for it didn't work wonders everywhere. Because if you'll remember, Aaron, and I'm sure you do, what did the red states do with Medicaid expansion?
Well, they refused to do it.
That's exactly right. And so what we saw when Obamacare rolled out was two Americas in terms of health care access. The blue states took the 90% matching funds from the federal government. So they picked up 10% of the cost to give insurance to some of their most vulnerable, hardworking citizens in their states, right? And, you know, red states didn't do it. Now, after a time period, it became clear that everybody who expanded Medicaid cut their insurance rates down by like 40, 50, 60%, but also kept their rural hospitals operating and shored up like their flagging healthcare system. Red states started to get a lot of pressure. And in some red states, I know Virginia, it was in 2017. Montana, when was that?
We passed Medicaid expansion in 2019.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's 10 years after, right? And so yeah. I mean, the data was just screaming. You can look at the data from Texas to Oregon. Medicaid expansion is a critical policy for the working class. And when people would say, well, the Democrats left the working class behind, which they did culturally, I always say, oh, yeah, well, who fucking expanded Medicaid?
Yeah.
It was the best program that we have created for working Americans in this country since, you know, the beginning of the New Deal stuff. So they call for an $800 billion cut out of healthcare budget. It's going to come right out of that Medicaid expansion, and it's going to leave people high and dry.
Well, that's going to wrap up another weird week from the front lines of saving democracy, and we'll stay checked in because we know so many people are checked out as this new administration takes our country by the underwear and keeps on yanking it up.
Oh, dude, they're giving us some wedgies, you know. As always, you guys can follow along till next time. Yes, I'm proudly keeping up the fight on Twitter. I know most of you have gentle souls have fled to Blue Sky, where you can have reasonable, rational,
conversations. I wouldn't deny you that, but I'm just going to point out that if you want to fight Nazis, you got to be where the Nazis are, and the Nazis are on X, okay? So consider coming back and helping us defend that space. You can follow me there on X at Rachel Bitticoff, or Blue Sky is the same handle. You know, we're going to start expanding out, I think, a little bit on some TikToks, right? And of course, we're at The Cycle on Substack. That's a major moment to thank our paid subscribers. Without them, this podcast doesn't exist. My work doesn't exist. The only people I'm answerable to are my paid subscribers. And that's why I say I work for the public. I work for you. And if you want to be part of that support, I really appreciate it.
Well said. And thank you, subscribers. Let's close out today with some feisty words from a friend of ours, also a fan of our book, Hit 'em Where It Hurts, How to Save Democracy by Beating Republicans at Their Own Game, former Republican National Committee Chairman Michael Steele.
Yeah, I got to tell you, man. I mean, I think a lot of us share Michael's frustration, right? I mean, these motherfuckers are tearing through the government with a wrecking ball. They're ruining thousands of people's lives every day, real live people, your neighbors, your friends, your uncle, right?
Well, in his praise for Hit 'em Where It Hurts, Michael said of you, Rachel, and I'm quoting here, "Democrats and Republicans who care about democracy would be wise to pay attention to her work!" Exclamation point. Well, Michael Steele appeared on MSNBC over the weekend with a plea to members of his former party, and we'll let him take it from here.
You know what? I'd just like you to show that you give a damn, that you got a little emotion about the fact that people are losing their jobs indiscriminately, that this individual sitting at down the 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue has given absolute power to one man who brings his son into the Oval Office, whose son says to him, "You're not the president. You shouldn't be in that chair." Now, where did he get that from? He got it from his daddy, because that's what his daddy thinks of the man who brought him into the Oval Office. So I just like to see somebody wake the hell up and get excited about the fact that your country is under assault. They're not at the gate anymore. They're in your bedrooms. They're in your living rooms. They're in your businesses. They got your data, dumbass. They got all your stuff. Elon Musk has his tentacles in everything you're doing, not just off of X, but now he's in the Treasury Department. He's in the Labor Department. He's in the Department of Homeland Security. And nobody seems to give a damn. So that's all I want somebody to show, that they care enough to get off their fat ass and say something about it.